Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Listening to another episode of Lords of Limited with your hosts Ben Wernie and Ethan Sachs.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. Joining me on the line, not from his native Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but from Las Vegas, Nevada, we have Ethan Sachs. Ethan, how's Vegas?
You know, it's pretty good, man. I'm here for a week rehearsing a play that's like a sort of weird situation where they're like already doing it. I'm replacing one of the actors. They're like doing it here. And then me and the rest of the cast are going to go back to Pittsburgh and do the play there for a few weeks. So yeah, I've been mostly holed up playing magic and trying to learn my lines. That's been my week. How about you? How are you doing?
That sounds like the dream for you, right?
That is the dream. Yeah.
Like just acting in magic?
I get to have this dream for like the next 3 months.
That's awesome.
So that's going to be pretty sweet. How's your week?
Yeah, doing well. Nothing out of the ordinary. I'm back into the streaming world, which is good. It's felt good to be streaming most days this week.
And you are like destroying Iconic Masters right now. Is that right?
Yeah, I am destroying Iconic Masters. Yeah. Currently 10-0. I trophied my first 3 drafts and I won round 1 of my 4th draft. So I have 100% win rate in Iconic Masters. And XLN, I have 25 trophies, 26 drafts. 153-70 record for a 68.6% win rate. So I assume at some point the losses are going to start flowing in Iconic Masters, and we'll get down to a normal win rate. But until then, I'm gonna celebrate being undefeated.
That's so great. I think at the end of the episode, we'll have to pick your brain a little bit about what's been working for you in Iconic Masters. And just, you said 76 drafts, or 26 drafts, and it's 76. 25 trophies and 26 drafts would have made
did
me
I
feel,
mix it up?
Feel real bad.
Oh, yeah. 25 trophies, 76 drafts, yeah.
Yeah. I want to put a disclaimer here. We're going to try, because I am not in my usual location, I am in a house with some wee children and some dogs, so we're going to try recording through it. So I apologize if some of that noise comes in the background for you guys, as I believe it is right now. Anyway, so my trophy record is I had 46 trophies in 181 drafts for Ixalan. It's a 65% win rate. And then Iconic Masters, I've got only 2 trophies, 2 measly little trophies in 14 drafts for a 60% win rate, 25-17. I've been really like messing around. You've just been going full doorkeeper.
I've been going full doorkeeper. That's the only deck I've drafted so far, and it's been working. So figure keep drafting it till it doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I definitely have had a lot of success with it and been really enjoying those decks when they come together. So we had a really cool announcement last week. We got a Patreon page up and running, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, as an opportunity for those of you who want to give back to the podcast, who've found it a worthwhile endeavor, maybe helped you win a few more drafts at your FNM, anything like that. And we've got some cool perks for you, some shout outs on the podcast, copy of the show notes, a little behind the scenes recording as we get ready for each episode. And we have a few new patrons this week that have gotten the shout-out tier. So Lee, Ryan, Andre, and Emil, thank you so much for your support. We really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, super awesome. Really appreciate you supporting the show. Cannot say thank you enough.
Yeah, it's amazing. So for today, I think we're going to mostly depart from Iconic Masters, maybe get there next week, really dive in once we've got a number of drafts under our belt. But today we wanted to talk about Ixalan and perhaps an uncharted corner of this format that a lot of people are not aware of.
Yes.
So, Ben, do you want to take me through a little bit of a roundtable here?
Yeah, I would be glad to. So this is one of my drafts from the last couple weeks here. Don't know exactly, probably about a week or so. ago. Actually, it's probably got to have been this last week because that's the first time I've been drafting. So probably within the last 7 days or so.
Yeah.
So you sit down at the round table and pack one, pick one. You see the following cards. Fathomfleet Firebrand, that's one in a red for the 2/2 with Smoke Breathing. One in a red to give it +1/+0, patent pending. Bishop Soldier, one in a white for the 2/2 Vampire with a lifelink. Wanted Scoundrels, one in a black for the 4/3 Pirate that when it dies, your opponent gets to make 2 treasure tokens. Walk the Plank, black-black sorcery, destroy target non-merfolk creature. And Sunbird's Invocation, the enchantment, 5 in a red. Let's see if I know what this does.
Okay.
Whenever you cast a spell from your hand, reveal the top X cards of your library, where X is that spell's converted mana cost. You may cast a card revealed this way with converted mana cost X or less without paying its mana cost. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in any order.
You know what's most impressive about you reciting that is the way you say it, the way you just slipped in cast this way or revealed this way. Revealed this way. That is just perfect Magic the Gathering templating right there. I think you nailed it.
All right.
So this pack is really strong. You've got like 2 of the best commons in Fathomfleet Firebrand and Bishop Soldier, 2 of the best uncommons in Wanted Scoundrels and Walk the Plank, and 1 of the jankiest rares in Sunbird's Invocation. I wish if we could go back now, if we were like a really high-tech podcast, I would insert our conversation from the set review about Wanted Scoundrels here.
And I would be so embarrassed.
Yeah. Ben, just for listeners who maybe didn't hear our set review, what grade did you give Wanted Scoundrels?
I believe I gave Wanted Scoundrels a D, and I said that the drawback was going to be too big of a cost to pay for just a 4/3 body for 2 mana. And boy, yeah, was I wrong.
Boy, were you wrong. I gave it a B minus, and that's still low. It's probably a B plus. Like, that card is absurdly strong.
Yes, one of the best uncommons in the set.
For sure. And I think beer drafting wise, Wanted Scoundrels, a little better than Walk the Plank, but not by much, right? Like, Walk the Plank is really good. Very cheap, efficient removal.
It is, but I think if you're on the beard philosophy, you value threats slightly higher than removal, and Wanted Scoundrels is one of the best, if not the best, 2-drop threat in the format.
I agree.
So yeah, that's what I picked here. I think it sounds like that's what you're on as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think I'd be on Wanted Scoundrels and then Walk the Plank slightly behind it. I think Walk the Plank edges out the other 2 2-drop creatures. What do you think?
I think so as well.
Yeah.
On to pick 2 here. You see the following cards. Vanquish the Weak, 2 and a black for instant speed. Destroy target creature. Power 3 or less. Almost said converted mana cost. Paladin of the Bloodstained, 3 and a white for the 3/2 vampire that when it comes into play makes a 1/1 lifelinking vampire token. Depths of Desire, 2 and a blue for the instant speed. Bounce something, make a treasure token. Bounce a creature, right? And then, or is it artifact or creature? I think it's artifact.
No, just creature. Run around creature. Is artifact.
Oh, artifact creature. Yeah, that's right. Ranging Raptors, 2 and a green for the 2/3 with the Enrage trigger of search your library for basic land card and put it onto the battlefield tapped. And Treasure Map, oh god, 2 colorless for the artifact that has 1 tap, scry 1. And then if you put a treasure counter on it, and then if you have 3 or more treasure counters on it at the end of the turn, you flip it and it transforms into, I don't even know what the name of the card is, Pirate's Cove, maybe? Something like that?
Wow, sure, yeah.
Is that right?
I have no idea.
Transforms into a land that lets you add colorless mana or tap, sacrifice a treasure to draw a card.
Everything about that was right, except 1, we don't know the name, but 2, it doesn't flip end of turn. It just flips immediately once you have 3 treasure.
Oh, does it?
Or once you have 3 counters on it.
3 counters on it? Hot dang.
Because you can do it on upkeep and then it flips.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Again, another pretty strong pack here. I mean, Vanquish the Weak, Ranging Raptors, couple like medium blue-white cards with Depths and Paladin. But Treasure Map, I think, is just super strong all around. And it's colorless, so it's going to go in any deck. I think even if you're in a super aggressive deck, you still like it because it smooths out some draws or helps you find that last bit of action you need when you've got your opponent. Its life total down pretty low. I think that's a really strong card, and I would definitely be looking to snatch that up here and wonder what the player to my right took over it.
Yeah, it's just good in every deck. You know, I've seen some people in my Twitch chat say that it's not good in aggressive decks, and I think it still is. It's so cheap. Yeah. It's such a low impact to your deck and your impact to curving out, and it provides such good late game inevitability even for an aggro deck. Lets you find that last piece of reach you need to get your opponent dead.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also what I grabbed there. So we're on the same path, Wanted Scoundrels and Treasure Map. Pick 3, you see the following cards. Pious Interdiction, 3 and a white for the enchantment. It's a pacifism effect that gains you 2 life when it enters the battlefield. Contract Killing, 3 black for the sorcery, destroy target creature, make yourself 2 treasure tokens. New Horizons, 2 and a green for the enchant land. Enchanted land has tap, add 2 mana of any one color to your mana pool, and when New Horizons enters the battlefield, you put a +1/+1 counter on target creature. and Wild Growth Walker, one and a green for the 1/3, I don't know what creature type this is.
I think it's an elemental.
An elemental, yeah, that sounds right, an elemental. And whenever you explore, you gain 3 life.
And put a counter on it.
And put a counter on it. Good lord, I'm all over the place.
It's all good. Again, people, we're trying to do these cards from memory. You know, we're not looking at these card images. So I think that this is sort of the pick that will maybe spoil what the rest of this episode is going to be about. But this pack is pretty strong. Again, I think you've got a couple different options. You could stick with Wanted Scoundrel's treasure map and grab Contract Killing to stay black and maybe stay with some treasure making theme so that when you flip your treasure map, you have Contract Killing treasures to draw some extra cards. But I think that Wild Growth Walker is a really strong card in the deck that we're going to talk about today, this sort of like Dirtle control deck, that I wouldn't fault you for taking it here, though it does feel like you're trying to like force that deck a little bit.
I mean, I ended up taking Wild Growth Walker here over the Contract Killing. I think because we've been on, you know, if you've watched our streams at all, you know, the last couple weeks and me the last week, we've been on a hashtag Dirtle Responsibly. We've been trying to Dirtle a little bit. And I think if you're trying to Dirtle, Wild Growth Walker is the highest upside card for that deck.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Contract Killing is probably just the strictly correct pick here.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just drafting normally and you're trying to read the table and see if the Dirtle deck comes to you. But I was trying to bias towards it a little bit here with the Wild Growth Walker pick.
Yeah, I think that's totally fine. I mean, I think it is one of the more important cards to the deck at common or uncommon that we'll talk about in a bit. That wouldn't fault you for grabbing it here, and you do, and I think that's totally acceptable. So what do we got for pick 4?
Were you on Contract Killing there?
I think I value the explore synergies a little less than you do. Like, I think I'm fine to have like 5 explore creatures and no payoffs for them. But I think from watching you navigate this deck a few times that you really like to have as many of those Wild Growth Walkers or explore payoffs as you can, which I think is totally fine.
Yeah, for sure.
Contract Killing is way more replaceable than Wild Growth Walker is in the deck.
Yep. Pick 4, you see the following cards. Mark of the Vampire, 3 and a black for the enchant creature. Enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and lifelink. Shining Aerosaur, 4 and a white for the 3/4 flying dinosaur. Ruthless Knave, 2 and a black for the 3/2 pirate that has 2 and a black, sacrifice a creature, make 2 treasure tokens, and then sacrifice 3 treasure tokens to draw a card. And then you see Overflowing Insight as your rare, 4 blue, 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 ding, 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 ding. Target player draws 7 cards.
So this is one of the cards that you hope to see to get you into this sort of control. We will use the word Dirtle a lot in today's episode, but this kind of Dirtle deck that I think really does have legs in the format, in this hyper-aggressive Ixalan format, that I think Overflowing Insight is really great. And because everyone else is on these crazy aggro decks, you're going to get past cards like Overflowing Insight, and that's really going to be what makes your deck tick. So I would be just like licking my chops and windmill slamming that Overflowing Insight into my pile.
That is what I did as well. On a pick 5, not much to see here. I snapped up a New Horizons, which was the enchant land. That's super important to the deck for fixing as far as letting you splash multiple colors. Pick 6, I went Atsakan Archer. Pick 7 was kind of a blank. Pick 8, I snapped up a Prosperous Pirates, which is a 4 and a blue for the 3/4 pirate that makes 2 treasure tokens when it enters the battlefield. And then pick 9, we wheeled Sunbird's Invocation from our opening pack, which is a big thing here. So I took Wanted Scoundrels initially pack 1 and noted that Sunbird's Invocation was in the pack and was hoping it was going to wheel, and I was psyched when I wheeled it on stream. And from that point on, I just, you know, decided I was drafting this deck.
Yeah, I mean, you've got 3 really powerful card draw engines with Treasure Map, Insight, and Sunbird's Invocation. You've got some good ramp payoffs with New Horizons and Prosperous Pirates, and you've got an explore payoff in Wild Growth Walker. I mean, you've got a really good package out of pack 1 here to make a good, maybe great version of this deck.
Yeah. All right, you want to set us up for just some general like thoughts on this archetype?
I'd like everyone listening to just show the conductor your ticket, get on the train, and take the express to Dirtle Town. Okay,
Dirtle Town, here we come.
Dirtle Town, USA is a great place. Ben recently set up his house here, and we've just been having a great time. So I want to talk about what we mean when we say Dirtle. Webster's Dictionary defines Dirtle as a deck that is 3 to 5 colors has a game plan of stabilizing in the early and mid part of the game to take over the late game with the raw power level of the cards in the deck.
And the possibility of a deck like this, kind of with and this sort of deck is possible in any sort of format. I think people are down on it in this format because the format is so aggressive, but I think the tools mm-hmm. are still kind of here. And the three things you're looking for when you're trying to draft a deck like this is what type of fixing is available in the format. And we do have fixing in Treasures and New Horizons.
Mm-hmm. And Drover of the Mighty.
And Drover of the Mighty, yeah. And then is there incidental life gain, which is kind of crucial for helping you stabilize. And then, you know, once you stabilize, maybe if you're at a precarious life total, come back and get your life total a little healthier so you've got breathing room. And then are the other people at your draft table drafting correctly, like quote unquote, like are they doing what they're supposed to be doing? And if so, especially in Ixalan, you know, if everyone's on beard, like we outlined a few episodes ago, nobody's going to be interested in the cards you're interested in. Mm-hmm. And a lot of time that runs out of steam and you can go over the top of that deck with this archetype.
I think also this was pre us doing the podcast, but I think we were on the same page in Amonkhet. I think Amonkhet is a very similarly aggressive format where beard strategies with cartouches really shine. But there was a Gift of Paradise deck that I think was quite strong in that format. And Gift of Paradise was sort of the complete package because it was incidental life gain, it was fixing, and it was ramp all in one. So looking out for those kinds of cards, like the New Horizons of the World or the Treasure Makers of the World, are the things that make these decks really be possible. Because without fixing, you aren't able to splash the rares or the bomby cards that you get.
I think that in Amonkhet, it was a little bit better to do this deck because I think Gift of Paradise was slightly better than New Horizons is. And I think there were a lot more bombs that you were going to get past in Amonkhet, but it's still very doable here too. And it's the same principles still apply.
Yeah, for sure. So talk about Dirtling specifically for Ixalan. So the deck tends to be Sultai based due to where the ramp and fixing are. So it's going to be some combination of green, blue, and black based because of the nature of treasure making and the nature of green having Drover of the Mighty and New Horizons, right? So New Horizons and Drover of the Mighty are going to be the obvious ramp fixers out of green. What's going on in blue, Ben?
In blue, you've got Sailor of Means, Depths of Desire, Prosperous Pirates. Those are kind of the three cards you're looking out for, and probably in the order of Sailor of Means, then Prosperous Pirates, then Depths of Desire. I don't know. What do you prefer between Depths and Prosperous Pirates?
It's tough because I find that you can get Prosperous Pirates, I think, a little later than Depths, but I agree. The combination, Sailor of Means, I think, is one of the strongest cards for this deck, and it's sort of weird that the deck often wants to be that blue is sort of the color fixer for this format, whereas green is what we're used to seeing. Green is usually where color fixing happens. But the fact that Sailor of Means and Prosperous Pirates provide a relevant blocker on the board and give you ramp and fixing is really key. Whereas like New Horizons and Drover of the Mighty are like, I'm here to cast other spells, but I am not here to mess around in combat.
Right. So the blue cards tick off two of those three boxes. They're helping you survive and they're helping you fix, whereas the green cards are only ticking off the fixing box.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think I agree. Sailor of Means, then Prosperous, then Depths.
What do we got in black?
So in black, Contract Killing is the premier fixer. It's really important to note that Contract Killing, in addition to Prosperous Pirates and New Horizons, assist with double splashes. And that's one of the reasons that's like the secondary reason why this deck works in terms of the amount of fixing that's available in the format is that three of those cards fix for double colored spells. Now you have to be a little judicious when you cast a Contract Killing if you're then trying to cast, let's say, Thundering Spineback off of only Treasures or New Horizons. Then you got to be like, all right, well, those two treasures just have to sit around unless I really, really need them because I'm holding out to use those to cast my double colored spell that I'm splashing in this deck. And then a slight, I think probably worse than most of them because you can't control when you get the treasure, but Direfleet Hoarder, the one in a black 2/1 that when it dies, you get a treasure. I think that's a fine early blocker. You know, you still have to contend with the players who are drafting beard, who are drafting aggressive decks. You've got to have what is called defensive speed. You've got to be able to play something early in the game. You can't just be spinning your wheels until you fire off your, Sunbird's Invocation or whatever to really start getting the game going. You'll be dead by then. So Direfleet Hoarder helps that, and then you get a little bonus when it dies.
Yeah, and I think important to note here, like, we've not mentioned, you know, a lot of the cards that we've tagged as the best commons in in Ixalan, you know, under the beard method. So I think you, if you're trying to draft this deck, you have to maybe reevaluate your pick orders a little bit. So I think Contract Killing certainly becomes better than Vanquish the Weak in black.
Yes.
If you're trying to draft this deck, and Sailor of Means becomes better than One with the Wind, which is pretty, like, hurts my soul, but I think that's I think that's the way to go if you're trying to draft this deck, or you feel like your seat wants to draft this deck.
Yes.
So just kind of a mentality shift there too. And then the other thing this deck needs is ways to survive the late game. You want to give us a little rundown on that?
Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit. So Explore, I think, is a mechanic that really lends itself to this kind of deck, because often the Explore synergies from black and green help fuel this deck in a way that other cards can't. So the two and the three drops especially, they either are going to provide a pretty good body when they explore non-land cards. So, like, think of Secret Squire is going to be a 2-3 for two, or the Merfolk Branchwalker is going to be a 3-2 for two. Those are, like, that's really strong stuff. Or Tashana's Wayfinder is a 3-3 for three. These are, like, good bodies that can match up with most of the commons in the format pretty well. And then if you reveal a land, that's fine too, because then often, you know, they're a little underpowered creatures, Seeker Squire especially, but even like a Merfolk Branchwalker is a 2-1 is probably going to be able to trade off for something, and then you drew a land off of it. And your deck, more than any other deck in the format, as a Dirtle deck, is going to be able to use that land most effectively. You're going to have mana sinks, you're going to have big spells you want to cast, or card draw spells, or anything like that. I think Wild Growth Walker, as we talked about before, and to a lesser extent, Lurking Chupacabra, they're really nice payoffs in this deck. They're like a good B plan while you're spinning your wheels and setting up your deck that, oh, I'm gaining 3-6 life, or, oh, I'm able to kill your X2 with my Chupacabra. These are, I think, things that this deck does pretty well. What else we got?
Life gain is pretty important to these decks, as we talked about earlier. So my favorite, and I think the best of these, is Wild Growth Walker. I've had the most success drafting these decks when I've had anywhere from 1 to 3 Wild Growth Walkers and some Explorer cards. And I've found that it's kind of hard sometimes to get the Walkers and the Explorer cards, because a lot of times there's a Wild Growth Walker and the Explorer card in the same pack, like a Tashana's Wayfinder or something. And I think you have to take the Wild Growth Walker, but I've often found myself splashing like some of the more mediocre Explorer cards from other colors to get there with my Wild Growth Walkers. So just something to be aware of there. And then another card that really makes this deck tick, I think, is Queen's Agent. That's 5 and a black for the 3-3 Vampire Scout that when it enters the battlefield, you explore. So either you get a 3-3 lifelinker and a land, or a 4-4 lifelinker. And no one, like literal no one, maybe the Vampire deck wants one copy of this, but nobody else wants this card. So if you're drafting this deck, you can constantly depend on wheeling this card. And I've happily played up to 4 copies of that card in these types of decks. It's just very good. It stabilizes you. It does everything you want to do. Some other ways to gain life that are not, you know, I think those are the two main ones. Ravenous Daggertooth is okay. Pious Interdiction's a card that really makes this deck tick. It's a removal spell and life gain, so you can take care of one of your opponent's threats and buffer your life total a little bit. And I've been fairly happy with Mark of the Vampire. I know you're a little less high on this card than I am.
Yeah.
But I've liked Mark of the Vampire as another way to gain life, throwing it on an attacker later in the game after you're fairly sure they don't have bounce or removal in their hand.
That's my only issue with Mark of the Vampire in this deck, is that of what you just said. Like, I want my life gain creature. I want to be able to, like, slam Queen's Agent and block with it somewhere. Like, but I feel like Mark of the Vampire, then I have to set it up, because I'm going to want to attack with the creature that I play it on the turn I play it, right? So that's then removing a blocker from my side of the battlefield. And, like, probably, depending on what the board is like, probably just setting myself up to get 2-for-1 and gain, like, 6 life, 5 life. So that, but if you are able to drop it late game, it can certainly, like, if you've stabilized and then that pulls you out, like, if you're at a precarious life total, that's the card that can really pull you out from that consistently and get you, like, far away from that, like, scary, unfriendly fire range or whatever.
Yeah, I agree. I think I like Queen's Agent more than Mark in the deck, but I think if you don't have Queen's Agents for whatever reason, I think you want maybe a Mark of the Vampire too. What about blocking? What do we got going on there?
So you need big butts. 4 toughness especially is really powerful. So Sailor of Means is again, one of the best cards in this deck. Wild Growth Walker, we talked about, like, that's a nice 2-drop that, well, if you explore once, like, it gets up to 4 toughness. Ixali's Diviner is actually a card that I like a lot. And this is another one that you can sort of depend on wheeling fairly consistently, like Queen's Agent. This is the 1 and a green 0-3 with explore. Usually you're hoping that this hits... You're hoping that this hits a non-land, because as a 2-mana 1/4, it's going to be able to be pretty relevant. If it hits a land, it's not the end of the world because of what we talked about earlier with the explore benefits, but the Exali's Diviner as a 1/4 is really, really strong. Anything like Atskin Archer and Grazing Whiptail, which we'll talk about in a bit, but four toughness blockers that are 3 or 2 mana are really, really key for this deck.
And then one of the ways you can take advantage of those also is splashing the Brontodon.
Yeah.
The 4 green-white. What's the first name of it? It's not belligerent. Is it belligerent Brontodon?
Yeah. Okay. The other one is ancient.
Ancient, that's right. So the 4/6 belligerent Brontodon that makes all your stuff deal damage equal to their toughness, that's a payoff card. You know, if you get this early defensive speed, something you can splash with your treasures to take advantage of those and help close out the game.
Yeah, for sure.
You've made this point a lot, and I really agree after drafting it this week that this deck's often soft to flyers. So Atakan Archer is pretty important. Grazing Whiptail is important. You know, and I didn't believe you one time. I think you were in chat and you were like, you should pick Grazing Whiptail here. And I didn't, and I really felt not picking that Grazing Whiptail. So don't underrate that card. That's 2 green-green for the 3/4 reach dinosaur. Air Elemental does a good job shoring up the air. The 3 blue-blue for the 4/4 flyer. And Crushing Canopy, I've found, is huge in this deck. That's 2 and a green for the instant speed. Destroy target creature with flying or destroy target enchantment. Because a couple of the ways you die are people slapping 1 with the wind on something. So you can 2-for-1 them if they 1 with the wind their creature. Or just flyers in general. If your opponent's got a couple Siren Lookouts that are 2-3 flyers, you're going to be in trouble. So you need to have answers to flyers. And I think you kind of nailed this exactly, and I'm with you now. 1 copy of Cobbled Wings is very, very important for this deck.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be in your main deck, but it should be in your 45. Like, I think it should be, you should at least have access to it out of the sideboard.
Yes, if you're playing a deck that's based around flyers, you want Cobbled Wings in your deck. So sideboard, main deck, and I think it's not an embarrassing main deck card either.
I can't really stress this enough. Like, this particular point is one of the ways that this deck just gets steamrolled is flying creatures. Like, they just drop a Siren's Lookout or they drop a 1 with the wind, and if you don't have some way to deal with it, you're gonna be in big, big trouble. So I think if you don't have the Whiptail in your deck, then you gotta splash Crushing Canopy. And it feels bad, but if Crushing Canopy is dead in your hand, that probably means you've stabilized anyway. That's been my experience.
Yep, I would agree.
So how do we get into the deck? Hashtag Dirtle Responsibly. Like, what are the ways that you want to find yourself? We sort of looked at one way in the round table, and what was that? What was that version of getting into this deck?
That was trying to, I think, draft normally. In that, I had the mindset of drafting normally with a slight bias towards this. Mm-hmm. So I think where I went off from normal draft, what I would do in a normal draft was on pick 3 when I had the choice between Contract Killing and Wild Growth Walker. I personally value the Wild Growth Walker very highly in these decks. I like to be green explore based. So I took that over Contract Killing there. So I was drafting normally and slanting towards this deck. And then once I saw that the cards were flowing for the deck, I moved in.
Yeah. So you can start drafting with this deck in mind, which is, I guess, sort of what you did, but not quite. I mean, you were taking mostly responsible picks and then took a Wild Growth Walker. But I think that's sort of what we talked about with having an adjusted pick order. So taking Sailor of Means probably as your top blue common, New Horizons or Tishana's Wayfinder as your top green common, valuing Wild Growth Walker and Lurking Chupacabra highly. Pious Interdiction is going to be your top white common, mostly because the deck doesn't end up base white a lot, but it's able to splash, and Pious Interdiction fulfills that, like, 2 rolls. It gains you a little bit of life, and it's catch-all removal for big bombs or for something that has been enhanced with a 1 with the wind, that kind of thing. And Contract Killing is going to get bumped up as your top black common there. So all those things. And you'll note that you're not really seeing any red cards at common here, and that's because, like, the things that you would want don't quite fit into this deck. I find that reds payoffs are generally at the uncommon and rare level here, but you're not really looking to put Unfriendly Fire or Fire Cannon Blast or Fathom Fleet Firebrand in your deck. Red is usually held out for, like, oh, I got a Lightning Strike, or oh, I got a Charging Monstrosaur, those sorts of things.
Yeah, I think so. The other way you can get into the deck is naturally. I certainly think they're, like, even drafting correctly, whatever quote-unquote correctly is, like, ideally drafting perfectly, drafting the hard way, the Ben S way to draft.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are seats in Ixalan that want to draft this deck. And I think certainly as the format has matured and more people are on, like, the aggro, 1 with the wind, draft some 2-drops, get you dead mentality, that those decks get diluted in power level because everyone's fighting over those cards. And then if you're, you know, at the table, if you're trying to fight with those other people over that archetype, or, you know, that's obviously supports like 5-6 drafters at a table, but I think there's a couple seats that maybe are going to end up with bad aggro decks, and a bad aggro deck is not where you want to be at all, because you're going to lose to the good aggro decks and you're going to lose to the mid-range control decks. So I think this is an important tool to have in your arsenal. So the way to get into this deck naturally, things that come to mind for me are seeing an early Wild Growth Walker out of a weak pack. I don't think you're supposed to probably pick that aggressively over good aggressive cards, but if you see a weak pack with a Wild Growth Walker in it, you can take it and feel out if this archetype's open. Drover the Mighty is just a generically powerful card that fixes you and goes in Dinosaurs, which is a great archetype, and goes really well in this deck. Shapers of Nature. One blue green for the 3/3, that's the Merfolk gold uncommon card. It's an awesome mana sink. It's great in Merfolk, and it's great in this deck. And then just starting off with removal spells, because this deck, you know, we've been kind of down on removal, but that's if you're on the aggressive plan. If you're in Dirtle Town, you need to have at least like 2 to 4 removal spells, I think, slotted up in your deck that can answer what your opponent's doing. So starting off with cards like Contract Killing, Pious Interdiction, Ixalan's Binding, and then seeing like some of these other types of cards, seeing Sailor of Means, seeing some of these other top commons for the Dirtle deck are how you kind of get into this if you're drafting normally.
Yeah. So I think a big question is like, we have a lot of work here, right? So we're altering our pick orders. We're trying to play these multicolored decks. We're trying to maybe get some explore synergies or some ramp going. So what are the reasons to do that? So aside from explore synergies, you're hopefully going to get, as we saw in Ben's draft, he opened and Sunbird's Invocation wheeled that and got past an Overflowing Insight. So you're hopefully going to get powerful cards that no one else is willing to take because this is a quote-unquote aggressive format. So this is going to include, right, Sunbird's Invocation, Overflowing Insight, almost all of the flip artifacts. Conqueror's Galleon is one of the strongest cards for this deck, I think. Treasure Map, as we saw. Oh, right, you also had that one. Jeez, you had 3 of these. Treasure Map, Thematic Compass, that's the one that lets you find lands out of your deck, and then it flips into the Maze of Ith land. Verdant Sun's Avatar is a really strong one, right? Because it's going to gain you life, but it's a 7-drop, which a lot of people aren't trying to cast in this format. You're also going to get the benefit of people being very tunneled in their tribes, and also if you're drafting online, of people not hate drafting because they're in leagues. So when the Vampire Drafter opens Regisaur Alpha, you're going to get shipped that rare. Or likewise, when the Dinosaur Drafter opens Vona, you're going to get shipped that rare. And your deck is equipped to cast all of these multicolored bombs or double-colored bombs that maybe you're not in, but you're able to take advantage of the green and blue fixing that you've already got to cast those spells.
Yeah, I can tell you, I had not played with Conqueror's Galleon until this week, and boy have I been missing out on some fun.
That card,
Conqueror's Galleon, is great. When you flip it, you feel invincible. You can take cards out of your graveyard, you can draw cards, you can loot. It just does it all. I didn't even know what it did on the other side.
I think back to when I 0-3'd the Ixalan Streamer Showdown, and in my third match, I think it was Loading Ready Run, attacked with Conqueror's Galleon, and chat was on a delay. So I was just like, what? Or no, they cast Conqueror's Galleon. They didn't, and I think I had a counterspell up, and I was like, whatever, who cares about this clunky thing? And I let it resolve, and chat was like, no, 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 you're now going to lose. And I definitely did after Conqueror's Galleon flipped. The card is obscenely powerful.
So some other benefits of being in this deck are being able to take advantage of like card advantage and mana sinks that other people like necessarily aren't able to take advantage of in their decks. So the two main like mana sinks in the format that are the best for this deck at the uncommon level, which you can kind of count on seeing, certainly Thundering Spineback is 5 green green for the 5/5 dinosaur that you can pay 5 and a green to make a 3/3 dinosaur trample token, and it gives all dinosaurs +1/+1, so essentially you're making 4/4 trample dinosaur tokens. That one a lot people are less interested in because it's a 7-drop, and then Shapers of Nature is just a premium card in the set, like very good in the Merfolk deck, which I think is probably one of the best archetypes. And then, but it also does double duty in this deck just as an excellent mana sink. So you don't really necessarily care about the creature type Merfolk. You care about the 2, like 4 mana put a +1/+1 counter on something, and 3 mana remove a +1/+1 counter to draw a card. That's what you care about.
I will say that I think these two cards being the only mana sinks at uncommon are kind of what make this deck possible in my, like, they're one of the things, I guess, that make the deck really possible, because if you had all the fixing and the ramp that we've talked about, that would be fine. But if you needed to have, if you could only find rares that were places to dump mana, I don't think this deck would come together nearly as often as it can with these two cards at uncommon.
Yeah, because the whole point of the deck is having late game inevitability, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you want to survive until your opponent has run out of steam, like around, I don't know, turn eight, turn nine, mm-hmm. and then start having places to dump your mana to give you inevitability. And both of these cards provide that.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's also some card advantage in the form of bombs. Like, so we've talked about Sunbird's Invocation and Overflowing Insight. So those, the draw seven and the enchantment that lets you like essentially cast a card for free when you cast a card most of the time. But there's some cards at the common and uncommon level that also are card advantage that slot very nicely into this deck if you don't end up with those rare payoffs. So Pirate's Prize does double duty. It's 3 and a blue, a draw 2 cards, but you also get to make a treasure token. So it gives you some card advantage and helps you fix for the whatever cards you're splashing. And Grim Captain's Call, I love this card. It's very good in this deck because a lot of times you're base black-green, and black-green have all 4 creature types naturally, and then you also are splashing around, so very often you're able to get 4 creatures back from the graveyard or have the possibility to get 4 creatures back from the graveyard when you cast your Grim Captain's Call.
I think it's important to note, Pirate's Prize is, I think, a really strong card for this deck, and you're going to get it late, and I think there will be a temptation when you see something like Charter Course to take that, but Pirate's Prize is often better in this deck because you are so rarely attacking when you want to be drawing cards. So and that the difference between the 2 and 4 mana is not that huge, but the treasure-making ability from Pirate's Prize is actually pretty relevant for your deck. You also need to have like a handful, we talked about this, 2 to 4 catch-all removal spells to take care of opposing bombs that your wall of blockers can't deal with, or maybe opposing flyers that your wall of blockers can't deal with. So we talked about Pious Interdiction, Ixalan's Binding, Contract Killing, Vraska's Contempt, if you are able to get that rare. They're all important pieces for this deck to survive. So do you want to talk about why this deck succeeds?
Yeah, we already hit on it a little bit. So almost every aggro deck in the format, except maybe Merfolk or Vampires. Vampires can play a long game too. Mm-hmm. They run out of steam by around turn 7 or turn 8. And if you stabilize against those aggro decks and or you're facing like a non-optimal version of that deck, like maybe, right, you know, the Merfolk player you're facing had another Merfolk drafter at their table, or maybe the Vampires player you're facing had another Vampires drafter at their table and they don't have the nuts deck, a lot of times you can stabilize and your card advantage and card quality and power level just allow you to take over the game. So if you don't die, you're just going to win because you've got places to dump your mana, because they're so few and far between in the format and they're so hard to take advantage of, that by drafting in this manner, you let yourself take advantage of all those late game cards, and you can just, you know, if you survive, you're gonna win. You have inevitability.
Yeah, the thing about these decks is that you're like generally thrilled to 1 for 1, which is sometimes not the case. If you're like a red-white aggro deck, you have to manage your resources of creatures very particularly. But in this deck, you just be like, great, 1 for 1 that, 1 for 1 that, because you know you're going, if your life total stays above 0, you're going to be able to get to a point where you're casting Pirate's Prize or you're casting Grim Captain Call for 3 creatures. You're going to be able to out-card advantage your opponent, who is just not equipped to face a deck that has this kind of late-game power.
Right. So everyone's on the beard philosophy, and you're saying you're trying to buck the train. Like, you're trying to take advantage of like getting cards late that other people don't want, that are good in your deck that aren't good in others' decks, to try to beat those decks that are all trying to do the same thing.
Right. And then, you know, people go like, wait, turn 2 Adanto's Vanguard, and you're like, great, turn 3 Sailor of Means.
Oh my god, that feels so good. Having 1/4s against Adanto Vanguard is the best.
Just
thing
on unbeatable.
The
yeah.
Yeah, that's happened to me multiple times, and I'm like, all right, great.
Yeah, I got turned on to this deck because I was so frustrated with playing like a red-white aggro deck and just like having no control over flooding out or getting mana screwed. That is the thing I really appreciate about this like Sultai Dirtle deck, is explore and card draw and card filtering and all that stuff, or like mana sinks. They all mitigate the variance of getting mana screwed or mana flooded. And that puts it more in the player's control, which is such a better experience as a Magic player than to just be like, well, I flooded out, or well, I didn't draw my 4th land. Like, these decks really are able to manipulate those draws into a winning strategy.
Yes, I agree. And so, like, as a good player, you know, the longer the game goes, the more decisions you have to make, and the more decisions you get to make as a good player, right, the more you should be slanting the game in your favor. Like, it just gives you more control over the outcome of the game. And I'll say, you got me turned onto this deck. I was watching you jealously draft this deck while I was doing my recordings that week during my lunch. And as soon as I could start drafting it this week, I 3-0'd the first time when I had Conqueror's Galleon, and I was just hooked. Like, it was so much fun. And I just naturally gravitate toward that style of deck. and I've been drafting it ever since. I think reasonably successfully, too. So I think it's certainly possible to 3-0 with this deck, and I've found myself consistently 2-1-ing with it.
Yeah.
And, you know, every once in a while you 1-2 or you 0-2 if it doesn't come together, especially if you're trying to force it.
Right.
But I do think it's a very viable archetype, and I think there are seats that actually want to do this, and I think if you're drafting Ixalan, this should be a tool in your draft arsenal.
Absolutely. I think there's something about the way you and I approach Magic. I think because we're such cube junkies that we are very comfortable with these kinds of decks. But I think for a new player, or for a player who sort of maybe hasn't played a lot of cube or used to linear two-color archetypes, this kind of deck seems very daunting and difficult to build and to maybe figure out the correct mana base for. So do you have any tips for people listening who maybe are interested in attempting this deck, but once they've drafted it, how do they build a proper mana base?
Yeah, the mana base is tricky. A general rule of thumb is that you want to have at least three sources for one card that you're splashing. So like if you're trying to splash a Charging Monstrosaur in your base blue-green deck, you want to have three treasure tokens, like three treasure producers, and, you know, like have those tokens earmarked for only casting Charging Monstrosaur, or maybe like a New Horizon and two Sailor of Means. That would let you play Charging Monstrosaur without even any mountains in your deck. And it gets trickier after that. If you've got like, you know, say three cards of a color that you're trying to splash, you'd probably want like maybe five sources of that color. There's no hard and fast rules, I don't think, any heuristics really, besides three sources for a single card that you're splashing. But the more that you do it, the better you get at it. Like, you just kind of get a feel for how many sources you want. Like, for example, in Iconic Masters just now, I've got a deck where the mana is rough, and I'm probably going to lose to my mana base. I've got four blue cards that I'm splashing and four blue sources, which is not ideal. Like, I'd want at least five or six sources for those cards. And I had five cards, and I cut a blue card to try to make my mana a little better, and I might need to cut another one. And a good thing to keep in mind is that if you're trying to draft a good Dirtle deck, like if you're trying to hashtag Dirtle responsibly, you want to keep your deck base two colors, like either base blue-green, base green-black, or base black-blue. And I think there's even probably a base white-green version of the deck.
Or white-blue, yeah.
Or white-blue that use, like, sailor, like white-blue uses Sailor Means Prosperous Pirates, white-green uses New Horizons Drover. But you're ideally wanting to be base two colors, and you want your early drops in those two colors so that you're consistently hitting your early drops so that you don't die.
Right. I feel like I've been infecting the Magic community with this archetype, you know, people are sharing their deck lists with me through Twitch or through Discord. And I think sometimes they look a bit messy because people are excited about this archetype and it looks like fun and you're getting to play with cards that you don't normally get to play with in these more streamlined aggressive decks. But you got to remember, you got to think about how you're casting your spells. You can't be putting Fathom Fleet Firebrand in your blue-green deck, like, because Fathom Fleet Firebrand is best on turn two and also requires red as an activation cost. So you can't really cast that off of treasure and hope it to do anything. It's tough to have something like Thundering Spineback as a splash is fine if you've got, like, if you've set aside your treasure from Contract Killing and Prosperous Pirates to cast the double green of Thundering Spineback. But then you have to remember that the reason you're putting it in your deck is it's activation. It's a mana sink. So you have to have a repeatable way to produce green mana. So you're going to have to put at least one forest in your deck or have multiple New Horizons. But New Horizons is a bad example because it's green, but you understand my point.
Yeah, and I think people, I can't tell you the number of times I've been drafting this deck, had a good version of the deck, like in my draft pile in pack two or something, and people come into my chat and be like, whoa, this looks terrible. This is a pile, blah, 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 blah. And I think a lot of times people are just wrong about that. They don't know what good versions of the deck look like. There are really powerful good versions of this deck in the format. But if you're not comfortable drafting this archetype, maybe wait until... You can try an Ixalan, but I think there's other formats that are certainly more friendly to this style of deck, like Iconic Masters, for example.
Yeah.
And I think Cube would be a great place, but you just need to try. Like, you and I didn't learn how to do this by winning with it right away. Like, we...
Oh, no. As like, evidenced from... I didn't learn by winning with it in the past 2 weeks. Like, you know, it took me a lot of, like... I was 1-2-ing sometimes with this kind of archetype because I just, like, I felt like this deck did exist and I wanted to figure out what made it tick, you know? But it's tough.
And I think you figured it out very well, and I think I gained a lot from watching your stream during that week before I dove in myself. But you need to get this style of deck in your draft arsenal and try to figure out how to do it for yourself, because it is, while it's maybe, like, tier 2 in this draft format.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, if it comes together, can be the best deck you can put together in your seat. And in other formats, it's going to be the tier one strategy. So if you want to have success in Limited, you need to know how to hashtag Dirtle responsibly.
Didn't we just come out of a format where this was the best deck? Wasn't five color green the best deck in Hour of Devastation?
Yeah, I think probably.
Like, if not the best, then one of the top two, top three decks in the format. Like, just jamming Oasis Ritualists and Gift of Paradise and seeing what rares your opponents wanted to pass you in the draft.
Yeah.
So I think that's all we have to say about Dirtling Responsibly. I think the train is now going to leave Dirtle Town. It's heading back to civilization. But we wanted to talk about Iconic Masters a little bit, and particularly I, who maybe have been splashing around a little bit, wanted to pick your brain, Mr. Tenno, about about how you've been approaching the format in your four drafts and what, or maybe what you've noticed from streams you've watched or anything like that.
Yeah, I think the first thing that I think the easiest thing to do is just do another round table here with my first
great
Iconic Masters draft and spawn some discussion from that. And then if mm-hmm. you've got any other questions or whatever, we can go through it after that.
Sounds good.
Okay, so pack one, pick one here for Iconic Masters. You see the following cards. Student of Ojutai, 3 and a white for the 2/4 human monk. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you gain 2 life. Reeves. I'm not going to go through every card in the pack. I'm going to pick out the ones I think are a little bit better in the commons. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to leave out some of the commons here.
Oh, and I think also this is a good time for us to mention. Ben and I think I said maybe on the podcast or in the set review that I would be doing non-fandom drafts. But the value in this set is so, so low. The most expensive card doesn't even pay for your draft on Magic Online. So we're both doing Phantom events, which are just like 10 ticket events that you don't get to keep the cards. So we won't be considering like money drafting at all in any of our draft picks, which is something we would consider otherwise probably.
Yeah, I think on GoatBots, the Phantom were like -2 or something, and like the 6/2/2/2s were like -7 or 8 or something. It was ridiculous. Yeah. Okay, so you see Student of Ojutai, you see Reeve's Soul, 1 and a black for the sorcery, destroy target creature with power 3 or less. Riverwheel Aerialist, 5 and a blue for the 4/5 flyer with prowess. You see Palladium Mirror, 3 colorless for the 2/2 mirror, tap to add 2 colorless to your mana pool. Heat Ray, red X for the instant. Heat Ray deals X damage to target creature. Draconic Roar, 1 and a red for the instant that deals 3 damage to target creature. And if you control a dragon or reveal a dragon as you cast it, it does 3 to that creature's controller. Roshin Meanderer, 3 and a red-green hybrid mana for a 4/4 giant shaman that taps to add 4 colorless to your mana pool that you can only spend on the X in X spells. And Anger of the Gods, 1 red-red for a sorcery that does 3 damage to each creature. And if a creature dealt damage this way would die this turn, exile it instead.
Yeah, this is a lot. I don't know what I would take here. I'm inclined to take Anger of the Gods, though it kind of folds to the wall decks of the format because all the walls have 4 toughness. I think it's really a big house if your opponent's on some sort of Jeskai-based aggro deck. So I think I would probably be on taking Anger of the Gods here with like a, I don't know, with close behind maybe one of the other removal spells, Draconic Roar or Reeve's Soul. I don't know. What do you think?
I ended up taking, I think those are all certainly reasonable things. I had no idea. I thought this was a pretty weak pack with no clear directions. And I still had in my mind, and I think it's true for this format, like the Ixalan mentality of that I wanted to be drafting a deck or an archetype mm-hmm. more than I cared about individually powerful cards. So I ended up settling on Roshin Meanderer, maybe looking to draft like a red-green X-Spells deck. Mm. And I was very close between that and Anger of the Gods. But I also knew I wanted to draft the wall deck. And I figured that the wall deck was probably good against stuff like Anger of the Gods was fairly replaceable in that deck because the walls were already blanking their small creatures. Right. But I think Anger of the Gods is probably the most powerful card in the pack. I think Anger of the Gods might be right. I don't know. It was a hard choice for me too. But I settled on Roshin Meanderer.
I think that Roshin Meanderer is the kind of card that you get if red-green is what you're supposed to be in, rather than like taking it first, you know? Like I would be yes. like I would be like grabbing Fireball for sure and then be like hoping to pick up a Roshin Meanderer, but it feels like it's a card you can get a lot later just because there's so few X spell dumps that are good. Like Heat Ray is kind of good, I guess, and is the Ivy thing is pretty bad, the creature that has an X spell.
I think the Ivy thing's okay if you have Crowned Saratok in your deck. The, yes. the 3 and yeah. a green for the 4/3 that gives all your creatures with +1/+1 counters trample. If I don't have a couple copies of that, I am not interested in that X spell at all. Like that makes sense. The like green X. So yeah, very close pick. I had no idea what to do there. Like I said, this was my first draft. Mm-hmm. Moving on to pick 2, you see the following cards. Condescend, blue X for an instant, counter target spell unless its controller pays X and you scry two. Einok Bonkin, one and a white for the 2/1 outlast with one and a white, so you can tap, pay one and a white, tap it to put a +1/+1 counter on it. And then each creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it has first strike. Swords to Plowshears, single white for an instant, exile target creature, its controller gains life equal to its power. Jessian Thief, two and a blue for the human rogue, 1/3 prowess, and when it deals combat damage to a player, draw a card.
Ben, are you just like only telling us blue and white cards from now on?
No, I think I literally think those are some of the best cards in the pack. No, I now that's where I've ended up every time, so it makes sense that, you know, that's why I've ended up there. But
yeah, no, I'm looking at the pack. I agree with you. Those are the only cards worth mentioning. I mean, it's an easy Swords to Plowshares here, right? Like, it's just going in any deck you draft. You'll like grab an Evolving Wilds or something to splash it if you're not in white. Like, you just, it's so powerful.
Yeah, it really is. And I was relieved to see that here because I really didn't want to go down the Roisin Meanderer route. And Swords to Plowshares is just a very flexible card. So I was very willing to abandon the Roisin Meanderer at this point. Yeah. All right, moving on to pick 3 cards that are interesting. Again, another student of Ojutai. A Reeve Soul, Pentarch Ward, which I think is a little underrated at the moment. Two and a white for an enchantment. When it enters the battlefield, choose a color. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card. An enchanted creature has protection from the chosen color, and this effect doesn't remove Pentarch Ward. I think this is like a very good way to push through damage, and if not a main deck card, a very powerful sideboard card if your opponent's heavier slanted towards one color.
Yeah,
but I've been very happy with that, and the fact that it replaces itself is just awesome. White of Precinct 6, one and a black for the 1/1 zombie, and it gets +1/+1 for each creature card in your opponent's graveyard. There's an Orzhov Basilica here, the Karu, or the Bounce Lands. That's the white-black one, so when you play it, it enters the battlefield tapped. It taps for a white and a black, and when it enters the battlefield, you return a land you control to your owner's hand. And then Crown Ceratoc, like I mentioned, that's 3 and a green for the 4/3 trample, and each creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it has trample. And then we see another Roisin Meanderer here, and I think that's it, really, that's in consideration.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you could just take a second Roisin Meanderer, but then it feels like it's harder to cast Swords to Plowshares. And again, like I said, I don't think that card has a ton of like great payoffs, but you're seeing your combo here, Crown Ceratoc plus Ivy Elemental. So I think you could like grab one of those three cards and hope to wheel one of them. But the Bounce Lands are so good, right?
They are so good. I think if you're not taking Bounce Lands highly, you should change that right now. I've been seeing them criminally late, and I think it's one of the reasons I've had success with my decks. I've been drafting like a Jeskai. That's the only deck I've drafted so far, is like a Jeskai or a white-blue based mill deck or Vent Sentinel deck. So Doorkeeper is the one, the 0/4 that taps to mill your opponent equal to the number of defenders you have, and Vent Sentinel taps to do damage equal to the number of defenders you have. But both of those have activation costs. Doorkeeper costs 2 and a blue, and Vent Sentinel costs 1 and a red. So this deck that I've been drafting is super mana hungry, and these Bounce Lands make it so you hit your land drops so much more consistently, because they're essentially 2-for-1s, and they're right. Very, very good, and they help you splash. And even if early in the draft it doesn't match up with your first two picks, it's still fine to take because you don't know what's going to happen the rest of the draft. They just give you so much flexibility and power.
And you can play, like, if you're blue-black and you have the white-blue one, play that land. Some people even think that you should be, like, if you have a red-green bounce land and you're blue-black, that you should still play that red-green bounce land. I'm not sure I'm quite there, but
I'm there if your mana can afford a colorless land.
Right, yeah, if you're straight two colors, if you can afford a colorless land. And it's just so good. It also, like, it helps mulligan. Like, if you mulligan into a hand with a bounce land in it, boom, unmulliganed.
Yeah, somebody in my chat, I don't remember who it was, said last night that the Karu lands are hard to mulligan with, because if you like, and yes, there's a drawback, the more you have in your deck, like if you have a 6-card hand with 2 Karu lands, you can't keep it because if you play them, they bounce themselves. So you essentially have no land drops, but all you need is 1 untapped land and a Karu land and you're unmulliganed. So I do think they benefit you a lot in the mulligan process.
Oh, they're so good.
All right. So I snapped up Orzhov Basilica. I think that's probably correct there.
Yeah, I agree.
Moving on to pick 4, see the following cards. Vent Sentinel, as mentioned earlier, 3 and a red for the 2/4 elemental with defender, and it has 1 and a red tap to deal damage equal to the number of defenders you control to your opponent. A couple more Student of Ojutai's, and a Johnny's Pride Mate, I think, is the only other card that really stands out to me here.
Yeah.
1 and a white for a 2/2 cat soldier, and whenever you gain life, you may put a +1/+1 counter on a Johnny's Pride Mate.
Yeah, I mean, we know you're taking Vent Sentinel, Ben. We know you're a sicko.
Yeah, I slammed it here. I wanted to draft this deck. I saw the Vent Sentinel, and I figured that was a good enough reason to try it out.
But I think this is also, like, coming off of Ixalan, Signal Reading, I think, is going to benefit people so well in Iconic Masters, because I think this is exactly the kind of, like, Vent Sentinel is an archetype-defining card in the format, at least in the couple days that we've had the format live. So seeing it fourth pick makes me think that other people to your right are not interested in this kind of deck. They're not interested in at least a red-based version of the wall deck, or they're not interested in splashing Vent Sentinel in their other wall deck or whatever. But either way, I think that is a pretty big signal for you to take it and try and move in on this archetype.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think that's one of the reasons I've had success in the format. And, you know, I could very easily be 7-3 too. Like, I've played some very close games and gotten very lucky in top deck and things like that. But I've been approaching drafting like I've been approaching drafting Ixalan. Like, I've been trying to take the most flexible, powerful cards I can in the first few picks, and including bounce lands. And then as soon as I see archetype-defining cards, I've been trying to snap them up and move in. And it's just so happened that I've seen Vent Sentinels and Doorkeepers a lot, because I think they're both very powerful and they're very good at common. And I think there's defenders in like white, green, blue, and red. So there's a lot of different color combinations to end up with a viable deck with Doorkeepers or Vent Sentinels as your win condition.
Yeah, for sure.
Pick five, see the following cards. Wrenchmind, you know, is a fine sideboard card advantage type card. It's been good against me because I've been dirtling around. That's two black. Target player discards two cards unless he or she discards an artifact card. There's Phyrexian Rager, two and a black for a 2/2 horror. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card and you lose one life. I think this card's bad in the format.
Yeah, I don't know where it goes.
Like, it's a generically powerful card, but it just gets blanked by so many cards that are better than it and go in an archetype. Like, if your opponent plays Phyrexian Rager and you're playing Doorkeepers and Vent Sentinels, you just don't care at all.
Yeah.
Mnemonic Wall is 4 and a blue for an 0/4 wall with Defender. When it enters the battlefield, you can return target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. It's been an all-star for me. I think it's very good in these Defender-based decks. Rebuying stuff like Swords to Plowshares is just insanely good.
It's also really good in blue-red Kiln Fiend spells.
Yes.
Like, having one copy of this to get back, you know, your removal spell or your Rift Bolt to, like, just finish them off for the final few points of damage, it's a really, really good card.
There's also Star Compass in the pack, two colorless mana for an artifact that enters the battlefield tap, and you tap to add one mana of any color that a basic land you can control. You control could produce to your mana pool. I see another Monastery Swift Sphere and a Darksteel Axe, which I just learned today has indestructible.
Did you try and kill it?
No, but chat saved me. I was like, well, we can always blow that up. And they were like, no, you can't do that.
Nice.
Equipped creature gets +2/+0, and it has an equip cost of 2. So I just slammed the Mnemonic Wall here. I think the only other card in contention is really Star Compass.
Yeah.
And I've not, in the decks I've drafted, I haven't really wanted the 2-mana mana rocks because I've had good cards. I've been much more interested in the Karu lands, the bounce lands, because my decks have been so mana hungry, and that lets you hit the land drops without taking up spell slots in your deck.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I kind of agree. I think that the bounce lands and the 2-mana mana rocks and having things like Doorkeeper on turn two, it's just a lot. That's a lot of like turn two competition, and I think the mana rocks maybe save for Mindstone get eked out a little bit.
Yeah. The rest of this draft is not super interesting, at least in this pack. And then I kind of got the hookup with some Doorkeepers and Vent Sentinels later on in the draft. And I ended up in a Jeskai-based like Doorkeeper Vent Sentinel control deck.
Sweet.
Yeah. So any like general questions about the format or anything like that?
I guess any. So we know what you like to draft and what you've been having success with. Seems like Jeskai Defenders is definitely a strong archetype. Any decks you've faced that you've been impressed by or very unimpressed by?
Yeah, I've been super impressed by blue-red spells. I've barely beaten two very good blue-red spells decks. One of them was taking advantage of the draw seven. It's two and a blue, and each player discards their hand, and then you both draw. I barely beat a person that had two of those in their deck. Like, they were on Kiln Fiend, aggro, like, dump my hand, then cast that, and it was super good against me. I think Kiln Fiend has been a very good archetype and very scary for me. I saw Sparrow's Rum, whose opinion I trust a lot. He had a very good blue-black mill deck. Think he ended up 3-0-ing with it. I'm not sure. I left in game 3 of the finals, but people in my chat were telling me he 3-0-ed with it today.
There's another streamer, Scalding Hot Soup, Ian, who I think he just streamed for like 10 hours yesterday. I think he got like 5 trophies, and I think he had a lot of success with blue-black mill. And I've faced a couple decks that have been very streamlined and taken advantage of Jace's Phantasm and White of Precinct 6 being at common as the kind of the payoffs for that deck. So I think that's a deck I'm looking forward to drafting. I haven't had a chance to draft it yet, but it does look like it could be one of the best decks in the format.
Yeah, and I think I've been lucky to dodge that archetype in the pairings because I've almost decked myself with the decks I've been drafting without my opponent trying to help that process along at all. So it seems like that deck is certainly going to be very strong against the Defender deck as well. I've been very impressed by the Prowess deck too, like in white. Seeker of the Way has been very impressive in my decks, and I haven't even like really been totally building around it. And my new pet card, what's the name of it? It's something cash, like Survivor's Cash, maybe?
A Survival Cash.
Survival Cash, like two and a white. The card's either great or horrible. There's no in between.
No, it really is.
But when it's great, it's so good. It's two and a white for the sorcery, and you when you cast it, you gain two life, and then if you have more life than the opponent, you draw a card. So if you're at parity or ahead, you just feel like you can't lose when you cast it. And then if you're behind, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's only gained me four life and turned on some Seeker of the Ways. So I'm a little more leery of it. But the first few times I cast it, it was just like stone unbeatable. So that's I'm going to have a soft spot for that card for the rest of the format. And I'm going to have to try really hard not to overvalue it. But yeah, that's been what I've noticed. What about you?
Yeah, I think blue, green, and blue-red have been the most successful archetypes for me. And I think blue-red being deep enough to either be the Kiln Fiend, Elusive Spellfist aggro deck or the Doorkeeper, Vent Sentinel, Defender deck is pretty impressive that both of those decks exist in those colors. I've been very unimpressed. I've had what I think are good versions of green-white, like sort of counters matters slash life gain synergies, and the decks have both one-2'd. So I think green-white is bad. I'm just sort of off of it until I see a good version of it, because I haven't been impressed by versions I've seen on the other side of the board either. I do think that black-white control is a real deck. I think like black-white counters or life gain, I think that's where that's going to exist. And black-green counters has been pretty impressive to me. I mean, Corpse Jack Menace into whatever Hero's Bane is one of the most fun things to do on your side and one of the most obnoxious things to see on your opponent's side. I was facing down like a 400-400 Hero's Bane today.
Oh, geez. That sounds awful.
It was terrible. I did almost win. Oh, and I wanted to say that, what's that card? The like Drakehaven, Mystical Teachings. Is that what it is?
Oh, I think that's the real deal.
That card is the real deal. Yeah, it's very good in blue-red spells.
Yeah, that was the other blue-red spells deck I faced. It was just like removal and grind you out, and it had two copies of Mystical Teachings, and I just happened to get lucky to draw my sideboard artifact and enchantment destruction against it.
It kind of reminds me of Riddle Form, because you're not taking a turn off when you cast it, right? It's triggering prowess, and it then reaps the benefits of you casting non-creature spells. And the fact that, other than like Kiln Fiend and Gutter Snipe, like it's triggering everything else. It's triggering the Seeker of the Way. It's triggering Elusive Spellfist, Jesse and Thief, all that stuff. And it's important to note that it also triggers off of it's non-creature spells. So you play some artifact. You're playing your Mind Stone. You're going to get to make a little 2/2 flyer out of there. So I think that card's really, really strong. That's impressed me a lot.
And it also double triggers off of your rebound spells. So like Stagger Shock, like triggers it twice. And then like the turn that it rebounds, you have all your mana up. So like some of the times the problem with that card is you just don't have enough mana to make the 2/2 flyers. Yeah. And rebound really helps mitigate that drawback a lot.
For sure.
So I think it's especially insane with rebound cards.
One other interaction that I want to throw out, because like rebound and suspend are just such funky mechanics that there's some weird interactions around those. And one of them is with Teferi. Teferi, I think, is a lot better in this format. Like I think of Teferi, Teferi is the 2BBB 3/4 with flash, comes into play, or it's a flash creature, and it says other creatures you control have flash that aren't on the battlefield, and your opponent can only cast spells anytime they can cast a sorcery.
Oh, snap.
That just turns off any rebound stuff and any suspend stuff that your opponent has. So I think is a card that I often don't think of as being good in cube, or like it's like fine in cube.
Yeah, I passed it today because I was like, it's just fine.
I think it really hoses a lot of things in the format.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah. All right. I think that's a good place to wrap it up here. Go draft some Iconic Masters if you haven't. Having tons of fun doing it. Next week, we'll figure out what we're going to do. Probably some Iconic Masters, maybe some Ixalan.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen. And as a reminder, we've got our XLN treasure hunt going on. If you've got screenshots of any of those achievements, you can hashtag them on Twitter and tweet at Lords of Limited or at either Ethan or I. Or you can email us screenshots at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Yeah, for sure. If you complete 5 of those, you get entered in a giveaway for a draft set of Ixalan, or maybe if you wanted some phantom drafts of IMA, we could maybe do that too. And then for everyone we accomplish as a listener base, we're going to do a combined Lords of Limited stream. We're up to, I think, just 17 hours still, right? We still haven't had someone submit the Sanguine Sacrament loop.
I was so close in one of my
Really?
Decks. I was 3 cards away
Oh my God.
Getting there. three cards away from digging through my deck to get there. I was so close, and then my opponent killed
me. Amazing. If anyone wants to get in touch with us, please come spam our Twitch chats. I'm at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. Ben is at twitch.tv/MrMetronome. We're both under those same handles on Twitter. We love to see people's decks, people's sweet board states they've got, anything like that. We're really primed to answer questions. YouTube, I have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/C/LordTupperware, hoping to get some Iconic Masters drafts up there pretty soon. But again, if you haven't had a chance to check it out, full set review with Ryan Sachs from Star City Games available on that YouTube channel.
Yeah, and I think another way to get in touch with us, if you are in a financial situation where you're interested in supporting the show on Patreon, the Discord channel on Patreon is a great place. Like, if you have, like, if you want feedback about your decks, or you're not sure what your 23rd card should be, or if you just want, like, advice about what's working for us at the moment, like, in real time, the Discord Lords of Limited chat is pretty great way to do that.
You weren't on Discord before this week, were you?
I was not, and I am a believer. It's awesome.
You were like, what is this?
Yeah, I don't know how I didn't use it before this week. It's great. It's very fun. I like your channel from your, like, I'm subscribed to your stream, and there's, like, I don't know, a bunch of people in there, and it's really fun sharing screenshots and talking about stuff. Like, it's just more of a fix if you're a draft junkie.
Yeah, for sure.
If you've got any feedback about the show or questions, you can also shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. See you later.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.